Welcome to the All's Authors Podcast. We're so glad you found us. I'm Mary Ann Schuco, a registered nurse, author, and dementia daughter. Please join me for bi-weekly episodes with our authors as we talk about their dementia journeys, sharing intimate details and painfully obtained knowledge to help others currently on that path. We hope these stories offer you comfort and support as we strive to break the silence and stigma surrounding a dementia diagnosis. May one of our authors speak to your experience. Today's guest is Irene Frances Olson, an Alzheimer's daughter who cared for her father for 5 years and went on to write a novel based on her experience, Requiem for the Status Quo. She also became a coordinator for caregiver support groups with the Alzheimer's Association and an ombudsman at a nursing facility. She is a former member of All's Authors Management Team and Board of Directors. Irene writes both fiction and nonfiction, the latter of which can be found on her personal blog, Living, the Ultimate Team Sport, also known as Baby Boomers and More. She is a columnist for Grandparents Day magazine. Her byline, In Your Corner, appears in each quarter's online magazine release. Much of Irene's early nonfiction pieces focus on a family caregiver's journey, especially as that journey relates to taking care of a family member with a terminal illness, such as cancer, Alzheimer's disease, and other dementia. In this episode, we discuss sibling relationships while caring for a parent with dementia, overcoming caregiver failures, and writing a novel based on the worst experiences of her life. Hi, Irene. Welcome to the All's Authors Podcast.
Hey, Marianne. Thanks so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it, and I'm pleased to be here.
Absolutely. So the first thing I want to ask you is if you could tell us a little information about your caregiving experience.
Okay. Well, for me, it involved my father. First of all, I should say that he has since passed. He died on October 13th, 2007 from Alzheimer's disease because it's always fatal. Initially, Dad had experienced quite a bit of forgetfulness, and he was so diligent, he was really concerned about it. Some people will just dismiss it as, well, he's old, so why shouldn't he forget something? But not my dad. So he was living in a CCRC, a continuing care retirement community, which for your listeners should know that you can move in there fully independent, no issues whatsoever, eventually perhaps need assisted living, and perhaps need memory care. So it was really a great place for him to live. So the facility where he lived independently suggested that he see a neurologist, and they gave him a suggested place. My father's CCRC was located in Medford, Oregon, Southern Oregon. And the neurologist worked out of Ashland. So I flew into Medford from Seattle, where I reside, and I attended his first assessment session, which was very eye-opening. And with that session, the neurologist then worked with me afterwards to get Dad's schedule to come back without me to have a complete assessment, which he did. And he couldn't drive anymore, at least he didn't feel comfortable driving to Ashland. So I arranged for a bus to take him, et cetera, a facility bus. Anyway, as a result of that assessment, the neurologist and my father and I had a conference call. That was the reveal appointment, shall we say. So with me in the Seattle area, my father in Medford, and the doctor in a nearby town at his office, we were told that Dad had Alzheimer's. And in my book, where Colleen, who's the protagonist, who arguably is me, when she and her father went for the reveal appointment, the summary of what was wrong with Patrick, Colleen's father, was verbatim what I found in my medical journals that I had kept for my father. So when you read that, it's very technical. When you read it, I just did it verbatim out of my father's records. So I guess if you want to say that there's something positive about our family's experience, is that it was only 5 years long. And for a lot of people, it goes a lot longer than that.
Right.
It did for my brother and his wife's disease journey. But I was the long distance caregiver. So initially, when he started showing symptoms and was diagnosed, I would visit him a couple times a year, fly down there, sometimes drive down with my husband.
And where was he?
Pardon?
Where was he?
He was in Medford, Oregon.
Oregon. Okay.
Yeah, Southern Oregon, and I'm in Washington State. So it was a really quick flight, and I got to know it really well. But once his symptoms started ramping up, I'd fly down every 6 weeks and stay a week at a time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the time, Alaska Airlines had wonderful sales, so I just bought them in bulk. So just making myself available to go. So, you know, it was a 5-year journey. And I would say that the symptoms were pretty progressive, but he never got to that real end stage where too often the person is just immobile and eventually can't eat, etc. He never really got to that stage, so that was a blessing.
Okay. Could you talk to us a little bit about what that doctor's assessment was like? I did that with my stepfather, and it was a very harrowing experience.
Yeah, I hated that my father was in Oregon and I was here, because mm-hmm. I couldn't hug him. I couldn't hold his hand, you know, and tell him everything's going to, I mean, I could tell him everything's going to be all right, but it was unpleasant. Thankfully, the doctor was so compassionate, because I think too often medical professionals can be so clinical that they don't bring their heart to the table. And he did, this neurologist. And so that was very, very helpful for us. My father did have support in Medford, not just with the staff at the place where he lived, but my mother died in 1994. And my father remarried a woman who lived in the same CCRC, Continuing Care Retirement Community. So he had Barbara to help him through that time. But she had advancing Parkinson's, and so it got to the point where she was not able to be that kind of support for him. But at least when he received that diagnosis, she was there. She was relieved to finally know definitively what it is. And that's how we all are, I think. You know, we go in with an ache or a pain to a doctor, we want them to tell us what it is. Please tell me why I'm in misery. So I think when you hear the diagnosis, it's devastating, but at least now you have a label for it and hopefully can do something about it. So that's kind of how we felt.
Were you prepared to be a caregiver at that point? Was that something that you had thought of?
Well, you know, when my mom was still living, they lived in Honolulu, Hawaii, and I was single for 21 years before I met my wonderful husband of 20 years. And I remember telling them, this was when they were just getting older, probably my age now, the age I am now. And I remember telling them, look, Mom and Dad, I don't have any obligations other than I work. If anything ever comes about, I want to be the person that takes care of you. Mm. And they said, well, no, we don't want any of our children. I have a brother and a sister as well. We don't want any of our children to ever be put in that role. So they did what Patrick did in my book, and that was to fully prepare financially and otherwise, which not everybody can do, and I totally get that, that should it come to the place where they needed assistance, they didn't want to have to call on their children, their adult children. But I was prepared. My father was diagnosed. I was prepared, if you want to call it, and this kind of might be addressed a little later, but I worked in the long-term care industry, first in the corporate office and then at a community of independent assisted living memory care residents. So I had all that experience. Even Marianne, I'm sure you must be familiar with Tipa Snow, receiving training from her, who's the guru of caregivers for someone with dementia. And so I was prepared, if you want to call it textbook wise, but unprepared emotional wise. So that's the answer to that question.
That's very common.
Yep.
So you mentioned you had a brother and sister. And how were they during this experience? Were they involved?
They were very supportive. They knew I had the caregiving and the knowledge database within myself to be able to do it. They fully trusted me. They never doubted me for a moment. I always kept them up to date. Every time I would come back from visiting Dad, I download to them. They were very supportive and appreciative, which isn't always the case, which is why I brought into my novel the case of a family member, a sibling, whomever, that is anything but supportive, critical, complaining, etc. But that wasn't the issue with my family. My brother and my sister, my brother lives locally with me, my sister lives in, I mean, near me, and my sister lives in California. They were so supportive, and I mean, it was truly a boost to what I was doing, because I mean, you know, it's not a gravy train when you're involved and trying to make decisions and meeting with medical professionals, meeting with psychological professionals, and trying to do the very best for someone you love very much. But Mary and Don, my brother and sister, my sister and brother, were super, super supportive. So that was extremely helpful, and not everybody has that.
That's very true. So why did you choose to write your book about your dementia experience?
Well, I didn't want to have anything to do with dementia after my father died. And I packed up his medical records, my journals. Oh boy, I highly recommend that if you are in a caregiving situation, whether it's for dementia or any other long-term or potentially fatal illness, boy, journal, 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 because you'll forget the pertinent information later or as needed. So I packed up my journals. I packed up my father's medical records and put it in a waterproof plastic container and underneath our stairs at our house. Never wanted to see it again. But then I decided that common sense and compassion took over, and I decided, look, Irene, if someone can't benefit from one of the worst, if not the worst times in your life, then that's kind of a selfish thing. And, but even more so than selfish, it's not, not bringing out a good outcome from something that was so horrible. So I decided, okay, well, I'm going to write a book. And if even one person, I mean that now and I meant it then, if even just one person can benefit from my family's experience, then all the better. Not that it was worth it, it's never worth it, but if one person could benefit from it, then I owe it to that one person to write about it. Why I chose fiction, I'll never know. For years, I've been writing nonfiction. I have a blog called babyboomersandmore.com, otherwise known as Living, the Ultimate Team Sport, because that's what living is. All nonfiction, experiences, etc. But I chose fiction, knowing absolutely zero about fiction, other than the fact that I read fiction all the time and I read nonfiction all the time. I didn't know grammar rules. I didn't know how to write dialogue, protagonist, antagonist, theme. I knew nothing about that, and I'm still learning. The first iteration, Marianne, of my novel, Requiem for the Status Quo, was 140,000 words long. Okay, that's like a 526-page book. Mm-hmm. Like Ken Follett, right? Yeah. He writes super long books, so does Stephen King. But I thought I had to put absolutely every experience in the book in order to be beneficial to someone else. So I was going over my, you know, I got my plastic container out from under the stairs. I was going over my journals, going over my father's medical records, going over my own experiences as an Alzheimer's Association caregiver facilitator, going over my brother's experiences. His wife died of mixed dementia, and thought I had to put everything in there if I could benefit someone. That was a mistake, obviously. So I sliced and diced it down to 69,000 words. So wow. That's a lot of slicing and dicing. But, you know, I'm glad that I did it. And obviously, I don't know. I can only speak for myself. I don't really enjoy writing, but I write if I have a reason to do so. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who's pretty prolific. She's local, who's an author, multi-publications, multi-books, multiple books. She says, I can't not write. That's not me. Mm. I write if I need to and if I feel there's a purpose, and otherwise I just don't write.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so how have readers responded to your book?
It was really, I'm going to give an example of the only bad interview I got, and that isn't even the right characterization of the review. She gave me 1 star out of 5, and I was devastated. But I read her review, and she said, I tried to read this book. I tried to like it. But I'm going through the same thing right now, and it was too close to home. Mm. So that really isn't a review of the book. It's a statement of her current situation.
Right.
So I could dismiss that, meaning, oh, it really wasn't a cruddy book. It's just that this was not the right time for her to be reading it. And maybe she's read it since. So that was the only, if you want to call it, negative review. And it really wasn't a review. It was just a statement of her personal situation. But the reviews are positive. I mean, let me think. I had to get a few of them out. Let's see. Well, this isn't verbatim, but they were saying things like, I felt like you were writing about my own journey. Or, I could feel your struggles and I was rooting for you along the way. Hmm. And the one that I really liked, the type of sentiments that I liked the most was similar to this in nature. You provided guidance for current givers, current caregivers in a user-friendly way. I learned from the story where you camouflaged how-to tips that were so helpful. Because, and I think maybe that's why I wrote fiction versus nonfiction, because even though I had clinical experience, I wasn't a medical professional. And of course I could have written a memoir, and that's nonfiction. But for some reason, I didn't even consider memoir, and I probably would have now that I've been introduced to memoir so much. Mm. But anyway, I just felt like if I could just portray my family's experience, even though a lot of that, some of what is in my book is fiction, it is based on personal experiences. So, and obviously from some of the reviews that I read, it was the right genre for me to choose.
Okay. So you mentioned that your father was living in a continuing care retirement community. Mm-hmm. Is that how it, that's what that
right.
is? So what was your experience with all that? Have you, had he had any home care prior to that or while he was there? What was it like in the facility? Did it meet your expectations?
It did. We were really fortunate. I mean, when he lived independently, he lived in a house with Barbara, his second wife, and you know, and everything was cool, and I would visit just to visit. And then when both of their needs were advancing, hers being Parkinson's and my father just getting older, at the time it wasn't dementia related yet, at least not diagnosed as such, they decided that living in an apartment on campus, the CCRC campus, that's smaller, you know, you don't have to vacuum, you don't have to cook, etc., was probably a good thing for them to do. And they did that, and it was wonderful. It was very helpful. And then when Barbara died, and Dad survived her, he was well into his dementia. So he still lived in the assisted living apartment. And then when those needs, I would get a call from the head person, medical person, saying, you know, I just want you to know, I don't want you to feel embarrassed, but your father was walking around in the middle of the night through the hallways and he wasn't fully clothed. And, you know, I mean, I was like, oh my goodness, this is, we're really going there, aren't we? So once a space in the memory care section opened up, he moved right in there. Mm. And I was thrilled, and I know this isn't always the case, but I was thrilled with the kind of care, not just the delivery of care, meaning he got all the medical care and blah, blah, blah that he needed, but everybody with whom I came in contact, as I mentioned earlier with the neurologist that my father met with, they brought their heart to the table. Mm-hmm. And when my father died, I had flown, I received a call saying, you better get here. And so I called my husband at work and I said, I don't know when I'm coming back, but I'm leaving and I'll be back when I'm back, but I'll tell you more later. And when he died, and I reflect this in my novel as well, in my novel, the name of the personal caregiver that was so helpful to Patrick in my novel is mirrored after the personal caregiver that my father had a lot of exposure to in the memory care unit. And when my father died, this gentleman came up to me and he was bawling. Hmm. You know, he was crying. And I said, oh my gosh, you're crying and I'm not even crying. Well, I had already cried, but anyway, for years. But there, I had a very, very good experience, and thankfully, and even through all of the medical and psychological challenges, I always felt that even though I wasn't there, he was being cared for. I wasn't worried about, oh, I wonder, since I'm not there, if they're doing X or not doing Y, you know. And I never had that experience. I never was worried about it. Cecilia was the head person in assisted living, AL, and I met with her all the time on the phone and in person. She always made time for me. I don't know why, but I wasn't trying to be insistent or anything. It was just a positive experience where he lived. And so I was grateful for that. Very, very glad that that was the case, because that, as I said too many times already, that is not always the situation. And that adds insult to injury.
Right.
So, but our family didn't have that, thankfully.
That's wonderful, because many families don't have a good experience.
I know that. Yeah. And I've heard many.
Are afraid. Yeah. People are afraid because they hear these horror stories.
Right.
But it doesn't really be that way.
You're right. And after my years after my father died, you know, I alluded to the fact that I was in a Alzheimer's Association caregiver meeting facilitator, but I also became a Washington State long-term care ombudsman. So I was assigned buildings to go to and investigate, and was horrified too many times with what I experienced. Mm-hmm. But I was glad that I was in that role so that what I saw, what I witnessed, I could be a part of rectifying it. So, yeah. And seeing that after my father had died and the positive experience I had where he lived, it made me realize even more how blessed we were that our experience was a positive one, because there is not always that situation. However, I don't want to ever say or imply that there's more bad than good. I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
I've witnessed bad, but I've also witnessed a lot of good. So I don't want anybody to feel that their loved one living in a long-term care setting is guaranteed to be bad. But while I say that, I will say, just try to be as involved as you can so that mm-hmm. So that they know you.
Exactly. It's very important.
Yeah, it is.
So what do you wish that people who have not encountered dementia in their lives knew about the disease?
How unpredictable it is. You know, there are some medical conditions, and Alzheimer's or other dementia are medical conditions. There are some medical conditions that might be more predictable than others. With that said, you know, just because this person's breast cancer and this person has breast cancer, that doesn't mean they're both going to be the same. Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
But with dementia, because we're all individuals, our brains are individual, it's just so unpredictable. So that's what I want people to go into it prepared, knowing that just because something succeeded today or an hour ago doesn't mean it's going to succeed tomorrow or an hour later. And by that, I mean, you might have acquired a way of, I know how to get Dad to eat his meal, and it worked. Yay, he ate his meal. Or this person allowed themselves to be bathed, or whatever the case may be. But tomorrow or the next meal, it could be totally didn't work. Mm-hmm. So I think one thing in life that I try to adopt is that, at least this has been my experience, that I think failures teach you more than successes. I think failures will always teach us valuable lessons, and not to be afraid of failing, because you will. You know, for those of us that might consider ourselves perfectionists or type A personalities or whatever, I'm not a psychologist. When you fail, not if, when you fail at something, and we'll just talk about it being a family caregiver, when you fail at something, it is not a failure. It's just, it didn't work that time. So, okay, so I'll try something different next time. And what failed last time may work this time. So, you know, if you go into the caregiving experience expecting to be a rousing success, you're going to be sorely disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
But it is such a rewarding experience. I'm sure, Marianne, you experienced that same thing. It's a rewarding experience, you know, and people say, how do you do it? How do you do what you need to do for your father, et cetera, et cetera? And I said, well, he was a pretty darn awesome father my whole life. I think I owe him a little bit of my own time and attention.
Yeah.
With that said, though, not everybody has parents that they had good experiences with. And I address that in my novel as well. There's a young lady whose father was abusive. And I never say what that abuse was, but it could be verbal, it could be sexual, it could be physical, anything. Not everybody has the extraordinary father like I had. And yet they're still called upon to be in that role. I can't imagine. Well, when I was an Alzheimer's facilitator, one of the clients or one of the people that attended, she had that very experience where now she's called upon to attend to and care for a person who was horrible to her whole life. I can't imagine. But I included that in my book because, unfortunately, whether it's a horrific upbringing or just episodes of that, of not good parenting or not good whatever, they may be called upon and to be caring for someone they don't care for.
Yes.
You know?
I know. That happened to me.
I know you. Yeah, right. So, and because we mentioned something like that, I want to, if I had to give any advice, well, I've already given some, but additional advice to those who are currently caregivers or might find themselves as a caregiver, and they will, regardless of what malady it might involve, ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a sign of weakness to ask for help. Too often, I think anybody, I imagine people listening after I say this will say, yep, that's exactly what happens. People will say, let's say my neighbor's husband dies. Call me if you need me. That's not an offer of help. Or someone's going through cancer treatment. Call me if you need me. Well, that again, and I know this might sound hypercritical, but that's not an offer of help.
Mm-hmm.
My suggestion, two suggestions, for the person who is observing someone going through something like caregiving or a death in the family, etc., provide solid offers that have feet to them. You know, I got the lawn, I'm getting the lawnmower out tomorrow. How about if I mow your lawn when I'm done with mine? Mm-hmm. Or I'm always cooking more food than I need. You know what? I'm going to even double it and I'll just put them in disposable containers for you, freeze them and give them to you for meals. Those are offers of assistance. When I say offer your assistance, I don't mean with the caregiving necessarily, but do you have 10 minutes for coffee? Do you want a break? I'll come over. I'll bring the coffee. Again, the meals, the mowing the lawn, whatever the case may be. Please, please, people, offer true assistance, true offers of assistance instead of the empty call me if you need me. Because, Marianne, I don't know if you experience this, but you're not going to call someone.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably not going to call. Oh, shoot. I don't want to have to plead my case and force this person to help me out or whatever. But because people won't always provide solid offers of assistance, I can say to the caregiver of whomever you're taking care of and whatever their malady might be, do not be afraid to ask. You know, when I talk about grocery shopping now, it seems crazy because of the times we're in, but pretend we're in normal times, whatever that is. You know what? I don't have milk for my cereal. Next time you go to the store, could you get me some milk? It's okay to ask someone for that. It's okay to ask someone to help you get some groceries that you need, your husband's favorite yogurt or whatever it might be. It's hard to ask, but it's imperative that the caregiver ask, because that might be the only way that you get what you need, right?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory, E bar gold.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah. So in your intro, I mentioned that you are one of the directors of ALS Authors, and you've done a lot of work for us, helping to establish us as a legitimate business and our 501c3 status, amongst other valuable things. What other advocacy work have you done on behalf of Alzheimer's and dementia?
Well, definitely the Alzheimer's Association as a facilitator for 5 years.
That was
Ombudsman.
Support group facilitator? Support group.
Yes, a support group facilitator for the Alzheimer's Association. Yes, I did that for 5 years. And then a long-term care ombudsman, which isn't necessarily dementia-focused, but is when it comes to observing those residents, those patients who aren't getting the assistance they need because either a facility person or a staff person might think they're not going to notice anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So that's being an advocate for others. My brother, as I alluded to earlier, a month after my father died, my brother's wife was diagnosed with dementia. So there was no break. And I was his standby caregiver to help with Nancy, and was happy to do it. She was not an easy person, even without dementia, shall we say? So I had the little bit of experience that other families might have if they have a upbringing, for example, of abuse or whatever. But I was tired, but I was glad that I could provide my brother with fresh assistance. And having just come off of that path, to be able to help him, and her journey was 5 years long, and it was not a good one. You know, not that there's any good dementia journey, but it was really difficult for especially my brother. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's it. And always being an ear to hear someone who might have a need, whether it's dementia related or other related. I think once you've been a caregiver for a family member, that role is transferable to other maladies, right? Mm-hmm. Different, but transferable. So happy to do it. Happy to be whatever assistance I can be, and was so thrilled, am thrilled that ALS Authors was a niche that I could jump into and be a part of. Absolutely.
Thank you so much for doing that. Could you read to us a little bit from your book?
Sure. I'll just do, here's a the lead-in for it. Colleen, as I mentioned, she's the protagonist, and arguably she's me or I'm her. As I mentioned, her brother was not supportive at all. And I won't spoil the book by saying why he wasn't, but he was always very critical. His behavior was callous towards Colleen and towards their father. He had no tolerance for his father's symptoms. He figured he could, you know, do better and not have those symptoms. You know, just try harder. That works. So Colleen and her sister, Patty, decided, you know, Dad needs more help than just his primary care physician. I think we should see a neurologist. We should get Dad involved in a neurologist. So having decided that, she and Colleen set up a coffee meeting at a bookstore with her brother. She was very nervous because her brother wasn't a nice person to have to deal with. But so she goes to the coffee shop at this bookstore, and he finally shows up. So that's the setup. And she's about to tell Jonathan what she and Patty feel is needed. My brother sat down in the chair across from me and without looking up, mumbled, "Hey, Colleen, do you want coffee or anything? My treat." "I'm good." He's finishing up what must be a very important text. So I just sat and waited for him to look at me. He slapped the phone down on the table and finally made eye contact with me. "So what's going on?" I really appreciate that you're here. I'm worried about Dad." "What about?" "Well, I've been thinking maybe it's time for us to get a second opinion about his memory condition." "Listen, a senior moment does not equate to a memory condition. He's 82, for God's sake." "Actually, he's 84. "Same thing. He's an old guy with an old brain. What else can you expect?" I shifted in my seat and pushed my coffee away. "Well, what I don't expect is for him to forget where Mom is buried. And I don't expect him to look at the holy water vessel at the entrance of the church and not know what it's used for. And I..." "So we had a bad day or two. Don't you have bad days when everything goes wrong?" "Yeah, like today," I mumbled. "What did you say?" "Well, it's just that I want you to realize that Dad's senior moments are happening more frequently and they're more troublesome. A neurologist could help us find out whether it's a bigger problem than his regular doctor indicated." "Hey, look, Dr. Barry is a good internist whom Dad's trusted for many years. If the doc says he has age-related memory problems, that's all it is." Jonathan shook his head, and with that crafty smile of his, he added, "As usual, you're overreacting. I honestly don't think it's as bad as you say." So that's where I'll leave it. But it gives you an idea of his denial. Yeah. Denial is very prevalent in families. And it gives you an idea of what Colleen was faced with, which was not what I was faced with, but many families are. So, and that passage also brings up, if you're not getting sufficient care or diagnosis from where your loved one is currently a patient, please go elsewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Please go elsewhere. You may say, "Well, but I don't want to offend the doctor." Well, it's your father, your mother, your sister, your brother that we're dealing with here. Their feelings matter, and their health matters more than any doctor's feelings. And doctors don't have all the answers. And we've all had good doctors and we've had bad doctors. So find one that works if you can. I know there can be a waiting list, but find one that satisfies your loved ones and your family's needs.
Very good advice. So how do we find your book?
Well, I'm on Amazon. The ebook is just $2.99. Paperback is $11.99. My author website is my name, Irene Frances with an E, Frances, Olson.com. That is my author website. I'll be putting updates on there. Again, my book is available on Amazon, but it's available everywhere. If you go into your local indie or chain bookstore and ask for my book, if you can go in there right now, or later, they may not have it in stock, but they will order it for you. I found that to be the case. So, and I would say, I would be remiss in not saying, go to allsauthors.com. Because when you go to allsauthors.com, you won't just find my book, but you'll find hundreds of books that have been carefully vetted. And I say that not as a commercial, but because I believe it's a really, truly wonderful resource that everybody can use. And it's easy to use. And the categories that are listed, you know, regardless of what your loved one might be going through, All's Authors has a book for you, if not more than one.
That's a wonderful commercial, I mean.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that. Is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners before we go?
I guess just one, I could go on forever, but if you are a former caregiver and don't know what to do with that experience, sit on it, think about it. You don't have to write a book. You don't have to become a facilitator for a care support group. You don't have to become an ombudsman. Think about what works for you, your personality, your family situation, as to what you do with what you experienced. You may do nothing, and that is absolutely okay.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely okay. So decide what needs to be done, or decide that nothing needs to be done. But take care of yourself. Don't beat yourself up. Don't keep ruminating over your failures. Look at all the good things you did and how you succeeded and stepped in when maybe others couldn't. Congratulate yourself on getting through it, for sure.
All right. Well, thank you, Irene. It was a pleasure to have you come today.
Thank you.
To our listeners.
Oh, thank you, Marianne. Very enjoyable, and I appreciate it, and I appreciate All's Authors as well.
Okay. Thanks a bunch. Have a great day.
It's the Bowtie Guy again, Christopher McClellan. I'm confident you enjoyed this episode of Untangling Dementia and Alzheimer's, featured on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. And be sure to visit allsauthors.com to learn more about their amazing authors, books, and other podcasts. Next week, we'll be introducing you to certified caregiver consultant Elizabeth Miller. Elizabeth is the presenter of Happy Healthy Caregiver, and she has quite the story to share with you. We'll have more information about Elizabeth coming up next week as her show debuts on UK Health Radio. And speaking of UK Health Radio, don't go anywhere. Our next show will be starting right after this quick break. Make it a great day. We'll see you soon. Bye for now.